It is Thursday, November 9th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, U.S. President Donald Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping discuss North Korea and trade during talks in Beijing. Syrian government forces recapture a key border crossing from Islamic State, and the cost of visiting some national parks here in the United States could double. It's all ahead. U.S. President Donald Trump says progress is being made in his talks with Chinese President Xi Jinping following earlier comments in which the U.S. leader said he intended to press Beijing to get North Korea to abandon its nuclear weapons program. Both leaders made joint statements on North Korea, with Trump acknowledging that China is crucial to a diplomatic solution in dealing with Kim Jong-un. Trump also said China can fix the problem easily and quickly. President Xi signaled Beijing is not ready to take the lead in forcing Pyongyang to abandon its nuclear ambitions. VOA Beijing correspondent Bill Ide is monitoring developments in the Chinese capital. He tells me about the talks between the two leaders on North Korea.
I think what they're trying to focus on is that, yes, both sides agree about denuclearization, that North Korea needs to denuclearize. It needs to be verifiable, you know, that we have to have a full plan in place to really end the program that is threatening the region. And I think they're trying to do this to, you know, shore up some confidence that they can work together. But really, there's, when you get down to the finer details, there's still a huge difference between the two sides' approaches and what they feel should be done to put pressure on North Korea. And that hasn't changed. There was no indication from this meeting. There was a lot of nice talk. The president expressed his confidence in Xi Jinping and he's a strong person and he can take care of North Korea. You know, very encouraging comments. Like we spoke about yesterday, the comments that President Trump made in Seoul, where he seemed to be hinting that there was something was going to be revealed during this visit. That didn't really happen today. They just confirmed that they're both on the same page when it comes to denuclearization. But obviously, China still does not, you know, there are limitations to how far and how fast China is willing to go when it comes to sanctions. And they feel that they've already ratcheted up enough pressure on North Korea.
China remains North Korea's really only ally.
Right. It's only ally. It's biggest trading partner. So, you know, China is the one that can apply pressure, that kind of pressure on North Korea. China continues to insist that, oh, this is because of the Korean War, and it's a war between the United States and North Korea, you know, completely ignoring the fact that China was involved in the war as well. But, you know, they stress the fact that the United States needs to sit down and talk with North Korea. And, you know, in addition to the continued pressure that President Trump has put on Pyongyang and urging it to take, make the right choice, to make a deal, he's also been very tough as well, too. So where this will all lead in the end is really hard to say.
Well, the two presidents also discussed another controversial issue, that is trade relations between the U.S. and China. And Mr. Trump said he talked about the U.S. trade deficit with China, saying it's shockingly hundreds of billions of dollars. But then he also seemed to blame past administrations for what he called it getting so far out of kilter. And he said he doesn't blame China for this. Kind of an unusual statement.
Yeah, it was quite a surprise. I mean, a contrast from, you know, the president who on the campaign trail accused China of raping the United States, and it was all China's fault. And now it's shifted back to previous administrations. I think this has a lot to do with, you know, where he is. You know, consider the setting. Where he is right now, he's in Beijing, and he's going to say things that are a little bit more flattering to China. The comments that he made today, I think, will be debated in the weeks to come, and we'll see what comes of that. But really, what the two countries did today in terms of the deficit issue is they tried to put a huge Band-Aid on it. And this is, they've reached some $250 billion in deals were signed during the meetings. And this in China is being played up as a very historic event, and it is arguably, these kinds of this size of deals signed just during a 2 days of meeting is unheard of, right? But when you look a little bit closer at what the deals are, already critics are starting to note that, these are pledges, these are deals that the companies would have done anyway. And really, there's a lot of questions about, well, is this just to kind of make the two sides feel good? And I think overall, it does help atmospherically to push the two sides in a positive directions, but it does not resolve the longstanding issues that are still there. And Trump and the Commerce Secretary and Tillerson, they've all made comments during today and yesterday as well about, the need to address these longstanding issues. But to get to the bottom of those issues, to resolve those issues, is going to take a lot more work. Maybe they've kind of helped to kind of cool things down, but in the months ahead, they're really going to have some tough work ahead of them.
VOA Beijing correspondent Bill Ide. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's trending?
Well, on yesterday's show, we talked about whether President Trump would tweet or wouldn't tweet on his trip to China. Of course, the very restrictive media climate there, they've blocked Twitter and Facebook. But then again, Trump isn't the average social media user. When you're president of the United States, you get certain perks. And just after we went off the air yesterday, we got our answer to the question of whether he would tweet or not. When he tweeted out, on behalf of First Lady Melania and I, thank you for an unforgettable afternoon in the Forbidden City, thanking President Xi Jinping and his wife. We're looking forward to rejoining you tomorrow morning. And since then has gone on a series of different tweets about his trip. Also one tweet about his marking the 1 year anniversary of his election victory last year. That answers our question. He is tweeting. Still a lot of questions, though, about how exactly he's doing this, the security measures, and still a lot of questions about the tone. He said that China is going to have a very strong relationship with the U.S. in these tweets. He said that his welcoming was memorable and impressive. An unusual change in tone from the presidential campaign that he is just marking the anniversary of, because during that campaign, he frequently railed against China and said that they were the enemy as far as the U.S. economy and jobs. Some people are noting that there has been change in some of the tone with other world leaders. The Greek prime minister is someone who had spoken out against Trump during the campaign, but when he came to the White House, Trump said, well, that was then, this is now, we're looking to build relationships. So people not just looking at the fact that he is tweeting, but the words that he's using as well, and trying to determine from that maybe some of the policies that are being discussed behind closed doors there in China. So we'll have to see if he continues to tweet and what happens there. Here in the U.S., one big trending story that we've been talking about for weeks and weeks are the sexual harassment and assault allegations being levied against a number of people in Hollywood, including actor Kevin Spacey. Now, after these allegations came out, there was word that his show House of Cards was going to be canceled and he was removed from the show. But there's an issue with one instance of a project that Kevin Spacey's working on. It's a movie called All the Money in the World, about J. Paul Getty, the oil titan who at one time was the richest man in the world. This movie was set for release in December, starring Kevin Spacey, but after these allegations, they've decided to reshoot all of Kevin Spacey's scenes with actor Christopher Plummer, and still plan to have released the movie in December. Something pretty
unusual. Amazing. Yeah.
People are saying they've never heard of an instance like this where they're going to go back and refilm everything with a different actor and still have the movie come out on time. But social media is really eager to see how this is done, if it's put together as well as the original movie was. The original movie was getting rave reviews, and they hope that this will too with this new actor, Christopher Plummer. And there's also a lot of memes now going around on social media where Christopher Plummer is being photoshopped into Kevin Spacey movies.
Oh, no.
Like The Usual Suspects and American Beauty, for which he won his two Oscars. Wars, other Kevin Spacey projects like House of Cards, where they've photoshopped Christopher Plummer's head onto Kevin Spacey's body. So people are taking a little bit of joke with that. But a lot of attention on this project and a lot of attention on the fallout from these sexual assault allegations. This is just one of a number of instances where movies and projects have had to be changed or canceled because of these allegations.
Yeah. All right. Thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. The U.S. accuses Russia of violating a Cold War-era arms treaty. The International Court gives a go-ahead for Burundi's war crimes investigation. Car use is restricted as toxic smog blankets the capital of India. And Saudi Arabia detains 208 people in a wide-ranging corruption probe. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Are you someone who performs random acts of kindness for other people? A person walking in front of you drops a bag of groceries and its contents spill out everywhere. You instinctively stoop down and help the other gather up the dropped items. It's just a natural human impulse. New research from Duke University now suggests that we're not the only species that displays such altruistic behavior. It turns out bonobos, a group of primates from Africa's Congo Basin, will go out of their way to help strangers without being asked to do so. While studying bonobos who were born in the wild, the researchers found that the small apes will help another get food even when their efforts aren't reciprocated. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, the price of admission to some U.S. national parks could double. Syrian government forces say they've recaptured the border town of Abu Kamal, the last major Islamic State stronghold in eastern Syria. Iraqi government forces recaptured the town of Al-Qam, their side of the border crossing with Syria, several days ago, as Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
The Syrian military spokesman said the army and its allies, including Lebanon's pro-Iranian Hezbollah militia, were involved in the effort to drive Islamic State out of Abu Kamal. He said Islamic State militants fled the town after bitter fighting and were being pursued by government forces as they dispersed in several directions. Syrian state TV showed government forces firing long-range artillery at Islamic State militants fleeing into the desert. It is not clear how many Islamic State fighters were in Abu Kamal before the Syrian army recaptured it. Arab media reported there were some pockets of resistance, and pictures inside the town showed widespread destruction. The Syrian army spokesman said government forces were demining roads and buildings booby-trapped by Islamic State. The Iraqi army and its Shiite militia allies recaptured the town of Al-Qa'im on the Iraqi side of the border with Abu Kamal several days ago. Saudi-owned Al-Hayat newspaper said many of the same Iraqi militia fighters, popularly called Al-Hashd, moved on to fight Islamic State in Abu Kamal. Professor Hilal Kashan, who teaches political science at the American University of Beirut, tells VOA the recapture of Abu Kamal represents a major victory for regional power broker and ally Iran.
Now, the Iraqis and Syrians have connected. It means the road has become wide open from Tehran to Beirut, and that's a major victory for Iran in the Middle East.
Kashan went on to point out that Saudi Arabia and Israel are likely to be upset by the key strategic victory of Iran in the region and that both will be worried about Tehran moving weapons along its newly won corridor to the Mediterranean Sea. The Syrian government claims the United States and Turkey are the main problem in the country. President Bashar al-Assad's top media advisor, Busayna Shaban, said Wednesday in an interview with Lebanon's Al-Mayadeen TV that Turkish forces are on Syrian soil illegally in the same way that American forces are on our soil illegally. U.S. forces are backing the Kurdish SDF militia, which has been battling Islamic State in the north and east of Syria. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. America's national parks are a popular destination for tourists and vacationers. More than 330 million people visited them in 2016, enjoying the spectacular scenery and natural wonders, and increasing the need for road repairs, additional park staff, and habitat restoration. For more than a century, the federal government has paid to protect the parks through subsidies, plus entry fees at the most popular parks, fees that have remained relatively low and unchanged for more than 50 years. That may change next year, when the National Park Service plans to more than double the cost of a day pass at the most popular parks, including Rocky Mountain National Park in Colorado. As Shelley Schlender reports, people in and around the park have mixed opinions about the change.
Tourism is the lifeblood of Estes Park, Colorado. Large crowds amble in and out of picture-perfect shops that offer everything from fancy jewelry to year-round Christmas ornaments and candied apples. A key to the little town's prosperity is just down the road. It's the snow-capped mountains and pristine meadows of Rocky Mountain National Park.
Do you know if we might find elk anywhere?
Sure. So any large open field, Moraine Park and Horseshoe Park.
The 100,000-hectare park draws nearly 5 million visitors every year. An entry fee of $30 lets a carload of visitors in for a week. Many pay just for an afternoon, as children from Pueblo, Colorado, skip through a pine forest back to their SUV. Their father says he's enjoyed the visit.
We just came to just, like I said, tour around a little bit.
But when he learns that next year the entry fee might jump to $70 a car, this dad lets out a gasp.
That's pretty pricey. Just to drive up and down and just look at a view, but yeah, increasing it, I think that's a little bit too much.
It would also be too much for a Houston, Texas couple who are finishing their first ever mountain hike.
I would say if we go more than $40 or $50.
Yeah, say more than $30 or $40. It starts scaring me away.
What's scaring park officials is the prospect of budget cuts. Next year, federal funding for the parks is expected to drop 10%, a cut of $300 million. The plan to raise entry fees at 17 of the nation's most popular parks won't replace that money, but it might generate an additional $70 million a year. The parks plan to use those funds to slowly help with an $11 billion backlog in overdue maintenance for aging roads, bridges, campgrounds, water lines, bathrooms, and other wear and tear caused by visitors who sometimes love nature to death. Back in Estes Park, Jewelry shop manager Norma Wiggins gives a thumbs up to higher entry fees.
We're thinking it'll be a good thing. We think people are not going to be upset with the rake height because you can pack up a full car, and I believe the amount is $70, is that correct? And I think people will pay it.
Down the street, coffee shop owner Richard Mazza wonders whether higher entry fees are a strategy to increase revenue while reducing overcrowding.
I was reading an article about Disney World. I guess it was maybe about a year back when they had raised the prices from whatever it was to about $100 a day to get in. And I think it was part of a control mechanism to decrease the amount of people coming into the park so that it would increase the experience. Over the years, we're moving up to 5 million visits in the Rocky Mountain National Park. And, you know, I think it's being used quite heavily.
Back inside Rocky Mountain National Park, a reduction in visitors is exactly what a nature lover from Fort Collins, Colorado, fears. Coupled with the administration's proposed budget cut, she worries that the nation's commitment to the parks will weaken.
And the national parks are the soul of this country, truly. So it almost makes me cry a lot of the times. I love it so much.
But a couple from Pennsylvania is more optimistic, at least about themselves.
I'm willing to pay to enjoy the scenery and nature.
But I have a little different perspective. We can do that. We're able to do that. But I'm a little concerned it would be cost prohibitive for families that can't afford $70 to come into the park.
That's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
The National Park Service is taking comments on their website about the proposals until Thanksgiving. For VOA News, I'm Shelley Schlender, reporting from Rocky Mountain National Park in Colorado.
And that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Our nations share an enduring bond, said President Donald Trump on his recent visit to Japan. America and Japan face many challenges and many opportunities, but we will be facing them together in friendship and as allies, said the president. The most dangerous threat remains the aggressive nature of the North Korean regime. Kim Jong-un has continued to develop North Korea's unlawful weapons programs, including illegal nuclear tests and outrageous launches of ballistic missiles directly over Japanese territory. The regime, said President Trump, is a threat to the civilized world and international peace and stability. We will not stand for that, said President Trump. The era of strategic patience is over. President Trump noted the tragic stories of Japanese young people whom North Korea has abducted over the years. No child, he said, should ever be subjected to such cruelty. President Trump also decried the barbaric murder of the young American college student Otto Warmbier at the hands of the North Korean regime. It's a horrible story, he said, and we can't let that happen. The United States of America stands in solidarity with the people of Japan against the North Korean menace. History has proven over and over that strong and free nations will always prevail over tyrants who oppress their people. The powerful and enduring U.S.-Japan alliance includes more than 50,000 members of the United States military stationed in Japan. In addition to that, 33,000 are stationed in South Korea. American and Japanese military personnel train together, work together, and will stand together to defend the security and sovereignty of both countries. America is also committed to improving its economic relationship with Japan. As President of the United States, I am committed to achieving a fair, free, and reciprocal trading relationship, said President Trump. We seek equal and reliable access for American exports to Japan's markets in order to eliminate our chronic trade imbalances and deficits with Japan. A mutual respect for culture and sovereignty, said President Trump, will continue to bring the U.S. and Japan closer together and open up new avenues of cooperation and success. The U.S. looks forward to working side by side with Japan in military and economic partnership.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.